Welcome to the Flash Notes Podcast, the podcast for busy professionals that need knowledge now. Brought to you by Flash Notes Book Summaries at getflashnotes.com, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. My name is Dean Bukhari, your host here at the Flash Notes Podcast, where every week we work to bring you the big ideas and actionable insights from some of the best business and self-improvement books out there to help you succeed in life and in business. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride as we dive into today's episode right here on the Flash Notes Podcast. Okay, so I am excited today because we have a new partner here on the show. We have recently partnered with Amazon's Audible, which is basically a place where you can go to get tons, 150,000 plus titles that they have in their database right now with full-length audiobooks, right? So if you enjoy getflashnotes.com and you're a member there, then you know that we've got plenty of 20-minute audiobook summaries to listen to. Now, Audible is pretty much the same thing, but they focus on a wider scope of different books, topics, and categories. And they've got, again, 150,000 plus titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on your iPhone, your Android, your Kindle, or your MP3 player. And so what we've done is we've created an awesome promo now that we've partnered up with Audible. And what you can do is go to audibletrial.com/Dean, and you can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at Audible. Again, that's a free 30-day trial with Audible plus a free downloaded audiobook, full length, whichever one that you want to choose. So check it out. Go to audibletrial.com/Dean. audibletrial.com/Dean. Check it out. It's an awesome promotion, and I really, really am excited about this new partnership that we've got going on with Audible. So come on over. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Dean, D-E-A-N, and hook yourself up. And today's guest is Jessica Turner. Now, Jessica is the author of a new book titled The Fringe Hours, Making Time for You is the subtitle, and the book comes out on February 17th, but today we've got Jessica here on the show to talk a little bit more about the book and to describe who she's helping. The book is specifically for women, and she really attacks some of the biggest problems that women face with regard to time management. So she says that it's perfect for any woman who's doing everything for everyone except for herself. So Jessica, welcome to the show, and thank you for making the time to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
So tell me a little bit about the book. Or before we do that, actually, can you tell me a little bit about your story and how you started getting into writing at themomcreative.com and why you wrote this book and what kind of sparked it all?
Sure, I absolutely can. Well, I live in Nashville with my husband, and we have three kids who are 6, 3, and a newborn that was born New Year's Eve. And I work full-time doing content development and strategy for a healthcare company here in Nashville. And then I blog at The Mom Creative, and as you'd probably guess with a site called The Mom Creative, I love to craft and do Pinterest projects and memory keeping and photography and those types of things. And so I get asked a lot, how do you make time for all of this? How do you do it all? How do you do it all? And so the fringe hours really started as kind of being the answer to that, of how I make time for myself and how I make myself a priority. But when I set out to write the book, I knew that it couldn't just be my story. It couldn't just be about me. And so I actually surveyed more than 2,000 women about how they spend their time, what they're passionate about, what their challenges are for making time for themselves, and got some really great research out of that. And that really provided the foundation for the fringe hours. And so in the book, I go through the challenges that women face for making time for themselves, why self-care is so important, how to find those fringe hours in your day, and then ultimately just a call for living a good life and living well with what you've been given. So it's exciting, and it's fun to finally be here and be talking about the book and having other folks just getting excited about the message. I think particularly with it being the beginning of the year and thinking about what is this year going to look like for me. I think so often, like you introduced, I think women are really great at taking care of everyone else and kind of leaving themselves for the very end. And that's just not a great way to live. And I know, Dean, you're somebody who is a huge proponent of self-care. And I think that when we're doing a good job of taking care of ourselves, that we're actually able to be better at all of the other roles that we have in our lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've got to be strong before you can help somebody else be strong, right?
Absolutely.
So why do you think, Justin, why do you think people, or women in particular, I suppose, do that? Why did they sort of take care of everybody else instead of themselves? And do you find that it's more so like a problem for women versus men?
You know, in my research, I really didn't study men like I did women, but I think anecdotally that is what I heard, that because so often, you know, women are playing that role of mother and caretaker and homemaker and on top of potentially working outside the home or having other responsibilities, volunteering, that sort of thing, that it makes it really difficult, that it seems like you need to take care of all of those other needs first, and that it's easier just to let yourself go and not, you know, make time to go to the gym or read that book you've been wanting to read or craft or whatever, instead of saying, you know what, maybe the laundry can wait and this morning I'm going to go and take some quiet time for myself or whatever that thing is for you. And so pretty soon what happens is that women go weeks, months, even years without making themselves a priority and don't even know where to begin, which is really, really sad.
And like, so what were some of the big problems as far as like time management that you sort of uncovered in your research?
Yeah, you know, and I think time, it probably isn't even time management. It goes deeper than that. It was feelings of guilt, feeling that, gosh, I should be doing chores around the house, or I should be at that soccer practice. Feelings of self-imposed guilt was a huge, huge one for women. So it wasn't that they didn't have the time so much as that they felt that it was not a good use of their time to make time for themselves. Another one was comparison, you know, seeing what other people were doing. Social media was a big one. You know, we look at Instagram, we look at Facebook, and we compare what other folks are doing and think, gosh, I should, my living room doesn't look like it's out of Better Homes and Gardens. I should be spending more time working on that than, you know, doing something that really feeds my soul. And so that was really interesting. When I set out to write The Fringe Hours, I thought that I was going to start with telling people how to find a time. And then after doing the research, I realized that, gosh, I couldn't start there. I needed to address first those feelings of comparison, guilt. Balance was another huge one, that women felt so out of balance that there was no way that they could possibly add self-care into the mix for their lives.
So one of my wife's friends actually was just telling her the other day that she canceled, or she, whatchamacallit, like shut down her Facebook account and just kind of stepped away from it because she found herself like flipping through the newsfeed, right? Flicking through the newsfeed and comparing herself to all her friends, just like you were talking about. So how, and I'm sure there are tons and tons of other women that are doing that. It makes them feel terrible about themselves. How do they fix it?
Yeah, I think that your wise friend was wise in that she said, you know what, this is so toxic to my life that she just got rid of it entirely. I've had friends who have, you know, deleted the app from their phone so that they weren't mindlessly looking at Facebook or Twitter or Instagram all day long. I think it's knowing kind of how boundaried you need to be with yourself. I think unfollowing is a great thing. There are people that every time I saw their photos on Instagram, I started feeling jealous or feeling those feelings of comparison. And so I said, you know what, I don't need to follow them. This is something that I'm choosing to do by going on this app. I don't need to have bad feelings then when I'm doing it. And so I just unfollowed those people. I think you can also turn those thoughts on their head and instead of judging or comparing, think of something positive. So what is the good that you can celebrate in that? That they got to go on that vacation, that they had that opportunity, thinking about the good and finding the good in those things is going to make you feel better, and then it's also going to help you to have a more positive perspective. Also, you know, talk to the person and hear more about their story. You know, maybe you see that Disney World vacation and you're jealous about it, but then you talk to your friend and you find out that they've been saving for it for 5 years, and it was such a huge, exciting, monumental thing in their life that they got to do that. You know, then that maybe changes how you felt about it. And so I think getting in and knowing people's stories can often help change our perspective as well.
I like that. I like that. I also have here in my notes, one of the things that I really liked that you put in the book was you said something about the disease to please. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty catchy. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It really is a disease, isn't it? That, you know, we go to such extremes to please whoever, you know, is in front of us, that it can really become toxic, you know, and that might be, you know, thinking about your kid's school and that you signed up to bring a snack. And so you want to look like the greatest mom. And so you home make these amazing cookies instead of just like going buy them at the store and calling it a day. You know, we have this disease that we become filled with to please those that we think are judging us when really no one cares. At the end of the day, no one cares.
Right. Right. But like, do you think that, I mean, what is it that they need to know in order to overcome that, though? Because there are a lot of, I think both men and women, like, we really do care. It's easy to say, like, don't care what other people think. But I think everybody cares what other people think to a certain degree, or at least a small group of people, right? I care what my wife thinks, but I don't care what somebody that's just criticizing me that I do not know thinks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think ultimately what we need to do, though, is think about why we're feeling those feelings. You know, obviously, wanting to please your spouse is going to be very different than wanting to please somebody that you don't even know. And so recognizing where those feelings are coming from, having that conversation, I think it goes back to some of that self-imposed pressure that we put on ourselves sometimes. So I have this disease to please my husband and make sure that, you know, I prepare a great meal every night when really he doesn't care if we order pizza once in a while, you know? And so that's more self-imposed than just wanting to please him, that, you know, he's happy as long as we have food, you know, that I think that we need to let go of that notion of being everything to everyone.
Right.
And that when we do that, then we have a life that's more fulfilling. I know that that's way easier for me to say than put into practice. But I think that over time, if you continue to remind yourself, is this something that is a need to do or a nice to do? Is this something that I can let go of? Can I maybe be just good enough, right, with just bringing store-bought cookies instead of doing the homemade route or whatever that thing is for you? Letting go over time, I think what really matters then will rise to the top for you. And that's what life is all about. It isn't about having the Pinterest perfect whatever it is, right?
Right, right. How can women then give themselves permission, like you mentioned in the book? How can they give themselves permission to actually sort of embrace the things that they really want to do, kind of pursue those things that really fulfill them, and just say no to the rest? How can they do that?
Well, I think you need to start small. And so maybe it's first recognizing that, gosh, this is something that I need in my own life. And then finding those fringe hours, which are those pockets of time that often go underused or wasted altogether in your day. So it might be, I know you're a big proponent of waking up early. I'm a big proponent of that as well. And so maybe it's not waking up at the same time as your kids, in just enough time to get out the door to go to work. But it's waking up 30 minutes early and taking time not to do chores, not to look at work email, but to just take time for yourself and start there. Start small. Start with that 30 minutes or start with, you know, one day a week when you take a lunch break, doing it just for you and going to a coffee shop or your favorite restaurant, bringing a book with you and taking time just for yourself and not worrying about a to-do list with a litany of items on it. And I think that over time, when you start to capture those fringe hours here and there, you'll begin to see the fruit of a life that practices self-care, and you'll want to practice it more. And then it'll be a lot easier to give yourself that permission. And I also think being accountable to someone else, you know, saying to my husband, you know what? I really need to take some time for myself. I am stressed out and exhausted. Can we figure out a time where I can go out and just have a couple hours by myself? And so having somebody else speak into your life that you need that is also very beneficial and I think helpful, particularly when it's hard for women to say, yes, I need this, to have someone else say, you need this. My husband will say to me, you know what? You seem really stressed. Like, you need to go out, go read a book, get some time to yourself, and I'll come back and I'm happier, I'm more at peace, and then that makes the whole house happier.
For sure, for sure. You really also, one of the things I really liked that you mentioned in the book also was you kind of went into depth with defining balance and work-life balance. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think balance, the balance chapter was the hardest chapter for me to write because it's sort of, I joke that it's like a unicorn, right? I mean, is balance ever really possible? I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that we talk about and we like the idea of. And so I explored it from the perspective of first figuring out, you know, gosh, what is the definition of balance and what are the challenges that I face within that? And two of the dictionary definitions for balance, one was having emotional stability and one was having a satisfying arrangement of elements. And I think for me and for so many women, we look at the calendar, or we look at our lives, and we've got this satisfying arrangement. It seems like everything's going to work out fine. But what we don't take into account is that emotional stability of how we're going to feel, how we're going to feel when we have our calendar so full with extracurricular activities and work responsibilities and church and all of those things that we honestly can't breathe. And so we're not taking into account how we're feeling emotionally. And so consequently, that balance is actually out of balance. And so I talk a lot about, you know, really taking a look at what are the no's that you should add in your life? What things are the not necessary to do? Maybe it's just not right now. Maybe it doesn't mean that it isn't a good thing. It just might not be good for this stage in your life. And I think recognizing that and choosing to say no every now and again actually brings about a good bit more balance in your life than you might otherwise have.
What are some of the things that you found when like people weren't saying no to enough that they should have been saying no to more?
I think that school activities were a big one for a lot of moms. They get over-involved. They feel like they have to be the greatest mom. So that was a big one. Church was another one where people feel like they need to volunteer a lot and do a whole bunch of activities and be there Wednesday night and be there Sunday night and volunteer for this and volunteer for that. Right. So that was a big one. I think overcommitting at work for a lot of working women, you know, saying yes, 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 yes. But then really what you need to say is, you know what? I'm really overwhelmed right now. Can that deadline be moved back a week? Or can I delegate that to somebody else? I think sometimes we're afraid to say no when really when we say no, it's usually embraced. I mean, people are thankful for honesty. And I think that we don't recognize that enough. I think you never regret saying no, but you often regret saying yes. And so whatever the thing is that you continuously are saying yes to, that really you might need to say no. That's what's causing folks to be out of balance. I was talking with a gal this week who was visiting and seeing the new baby, and she was saying how she spends 2 hours a day in the car going from practice to practice to practice for her kids, and all of her kids are in two different extracurricular activities. And she said, you know, I said to myself that they would only ever do one, but here I am, they're in two, and I'm really kicking myself. And that would have been something that had she said no at the beginning of the season, we're staying with just doing one activity, she wouldn't be in the place where she is now, which is stressed and in her car all of the time and probably having a lot less time for herself and self-care and some other things that would probably be a better use of her time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that, you know, saying no, like when people do that, and you do it effectively in a way there, you kind of say no with a smile on your face because you know that there's other things that you have going on in your life, whether that be personal or professional or whatever it is, you've got a very specific, you know, purpose for whatever it is that you've got going on in your life. And when you have that, then it's a lot easier for us to say no to things, you know, regardless of whether you're a man, you're a woman, doesn't matter. Like if you have something that's really, really important to you that you are focusing on, it's so much easier to say yes to that and to say no to the other things, you know? So I think that's a big thing too, for sure.
And saying no is hard. I'm not saying that it's easy, particularly if you are somebody who says yes a lot. Yeah. But I think the more you say no and the more you experience the freedom of saying no and not having the litany of responsibilities and tasks that really don't bring you joy and bring life to you, the happier you're going to be and the easier it's going to be to say no with ease.
For sure. So what are some of the things that, so if somebody wanted to cultivate balance within themselves, right? So she's got the no thing down. She's sort of reduced those distractions, which is also another way of saying yes to meaningless things, right? Having the phone on and like keeping your notifications on and checking your email every 5 minutes,
right?
And, you know, going on Facebook more than you need to, and just all this divided attention that's going on. So they've got that dealt with, right? So now they've got a ton of free time on their hands, right? Because they've opened up more space to focus on the things that matter. How could somebody sort of design a day that would be more fulfilling for them now that they've got this space, or to cultivate balance within themselves? How could you
right.
do that?
Well, and I don't know too many women who are going to say no to these things and all of a sudden have a ton of time, but I think that they're going to have open pockets of time.
Yeah.
And so I just want to clarify that. I don't remember the last time I had like a day to myself, right? That doesn't happen too often, but I do have pockets of time every single day where I'm able to practice self-care. And so I think it's something I talk about in the book is doing a time tracker, where for a week you track your time. And this is different than a calendar. It's that you are actually writing down the 15 minutes that you do the laundry and the 30 minutes that you're in the car doing, you know, run to daycare and to school and whatnot. But you're figuring out what your day looks like so that you can find those pockets of time easier. And then once you have those times broken out in your week, you can look and say, gosh, okay, I have time here and I have time here. What is it that I want to do for myself? What is it that will bring me joy? And for some women, they can say that right off the bat. I know for me, I joke on my Instagram feed that I have too many hobbies. You know, I have no trouble filling up my time with things that I want to do. But for other women who haven't made time for themselves in such a long period of time, it might be difficult to even figure out what to do with that time. And so if that's the case, I think it's going back and thinking about your childhood. What did you love to do as a kid? I know for me, I always had a book in my hand. I was in the car, I was reading. And so I loved to paint and I loved to craft. And those things are still true for me as an adult. And I think for a lot of people, the things that you love to do as a child, if you love to be outside, you probably still love to be outside. If you love to run and you love gym class, you probably still would enjoy going to the gym. And so figuring out what it is that you would enjoy doing. And then I think it's just pulling the trigger and doing it. It's going for that walk. It's going to the library and checking out a book, or going on Amazon and looking at what the top books are and ordering one for yourself. And it's actually doing that thing. And then doing it over time, time and time again, eventually is going to make it really easy to then be practicing that self-care on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, it'll become a habit.
Absolutely.
What do you think about multitasking?
I think that there's good multitasking and bad multitasking. So the good multitasking is when you can do something that is mindless with something that is mindful and that you need to be focused on. One of the examples I give in the book is I work from home one day a week, and I can easily do a conference call and be totally focused on that conference call and focus on that entirely while folding laundry. Laundry does not, you know, take anything away from me focusing on that conversation. It's the bad multitasking that gets us into trouble when, you know, we're listening to our kids and trying to have a conversation with them while we're trying to do a recipe for dinner and we end up burning the food. You know, those types of things where we're using our brain more than it's capable of. That's the bad multitasking, and that ends up costing us more time and getting us into trouble.
Yeah, I remember reading about this thing called divided attention.
Mm-hmm.
where it's basically, because for a long time I said, I'd always say there's no such thing as multitasking. It's impossible to multitask. You cannot do it no matter who you are. But the truth is, I think that there is a certain degree of it. And I mean a small degree, which it falls under that like divided attention category where, you know, I can walk my dog and talk on the cell phone at the same time with no problem whatsoever. I can make, you know, it'll be cool. But if I'm an airline, you know, traffic controller and I'm trying to land an airline or an airplane from the sky and direct them to land safely, it's probably not a good idea to be texting on my cell phone, right? So,
right. I hope you're never texting on your cell phone if you're landing an airplane.
I think the point being that, you know, some things, and usually the priorities, right, the important things in our lives require our full focus, you know, single task attention. Whereas smaller things like, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, talking to your husband or having a conversation while you're folding your laundry, no problem. You know, trying to write a book and fold your laundry, big problem.
Big problem.
Did you talk at all about like goal setting and things like that in the book?
You know, I didn't spend too much time on that. I really focused on identifying passions and figuring out what those are.
Oh, that's a good one. How can a woman identify her passion? That's a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think, like I said before, one thing was looking back on your childhood. Another one that I talked about was thinking about who inspires you in your life and what is it about them that inspires you. I have a friend named Brittany who is an amazing seamstress, and every time I'm with her, I want to sew. And I want to learn what she's doing, and I want to see how she figures out color and mixes patterns and all of that good stuff. And she makes me want to pursue that craft. And so thinking about who inspires you in your life can be a great window into what you might be passionate about.
Nice, nice. And did you, one of the questions I often ask our guests is, you know, who inspires you? Who are some of the mentors that kind of helped shape your perspective on the world?
Yeah, my mom is someone that I talk about a lot in the book because she always did a great job of making time for her passion, which was painting. Mm-hmm. And she used to love getting together with girlfriends and painting with them for the weekend and going away on retreats to paint and taking classes and that sort of thing. And so I always saw her making time for that hobby. And I also, you know, saw periods of time where she didn't and saw how that negatively impacted her. And so she was a big one because she always said, you know, you always make time for what's important to you. And I think that's so true. And that's how I want to live my life. And that's what I want people to see is that I'm making time for the things that really matter.
One of the good things that you mentioned in the book also was about talking about asking for help. Mm-hmm. And how important that is. And, you know, personally for me, for a long time, I didn't like to ask for help because I thought it was like this, you know, sign of weakness and how it didn't, you know, maybe it made me seem like I didn't know as much and blah, 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 all this ego-based, you know, nonsense. But when I finally started embracing that, it had an immeasurable impact on my ability to get more things done and have more impact and really just overall make more of a difference in my life and my business and things of that nature. But my question is that a lot of people, I think, aren't quite sure how to approach that whole thing, how to get over themselves and to start embracing asking for help. So how can people do that?
Yeah, I like how you say getting over themselves, because I think that's a big one, particularly for women. It's a pride thing that we should be able to do it all. And I was with you once I finally started asking for help and embracing that I couldn't do it all on my own. It was enormously impactful in such a positive manner. And now I'm like, what other help can I get? What other help can I get? Where else can I ask for help? And so I think help starts at home. I think it starts with acknowledging with whom you live with. Hey, I could really need some help. Absolutely. You know, it starts at home. And so, you know, my husband is not a mind reader. He doesn't know that what else I have on my plate and what I'm thinking about and that, hey, it would be really great if he could take the laundry out of the dryer and, you know, fold it or whatever it is. He doesn't know that I put one in there. You know, I need to say, hey, can you help me with this? And so I think acknowledging that if you don't live by yourself, that help needs to start at home. And then it's thinking about where are the areas in your life that you could use help? Is it in cleaning? Is it in organizing? Is it with food preparation? Is it, with going grocery shopping or home maintenance or childcare? Where is it that you could use help? And then figuring out with your budget what would make sense? Because there's a whole host of options. You do not have to be wealthy to ask for help or to engage services that can provide help. There's lots of really cost-effective ways to do it, from doing babysitting trades with your friends to using sites like Groupon or Living Social or Amazon Local to get deals on, home maintenance projects and things like that. And so it's figuring out where you can find where you need the help, and then how can you find it in a way that's going to work well with your budget and your resources.
Absolutely. And a shallow technique, I think, that really works very, very effectively is just flattery, right? If somebody's out of shape, for instance, and they want to learn from somebody who's really, really just in excellent shape, then it might be a good idea to say, hey, I really admire the way that you've dedicated yourself to health and wellness, and I'd like to learn a little bit more from you. Would you mind talking to me about what you do and how you became so awesome at what you're doing or whatever it is? You know what I mean? I think
absolutely.
That's an excellent technique too.
I love that.
Cool. So as far as like books go, did you have any that that really had an impact on you? That's another question that we always ask is, what were some of the books that you read that influenced you, and what would you recommend to our female listeners?
There is a book by Bridget Schulte called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And that was very impactful to me as I was doing the research for the Fringe Hours and looking at what the conversation is about time today. I was really inspired by that. I also love the book 1,000 Gifts by Anne Voskamp, which is a book about gratitude. She just talks about her journey of documenting what she was thankful for every single day. And I think living a life of practicing gratitude and choosing joy, ultimately, that is a beautiful way to live. And I just love the way that she tells her story and inspires others to practice gratitude. So those are two books that I would say had a big impact on me as I was thinking about the message of the Fringe Hours and thinking about time and thinking about just living a really beautiful life.
For sure. So before we started the show, you and I were talking a little bit about kids. You mentioned that you've got a 2-week-old baby at home, and I was telling you about how we just found out that we were pregnant and with our first baby. So I know you also mentioned childcare in the book. So I got to ask you, for personal reasons, selfishly, what are some tips? What are some strategies? What do we need to know? Knowing that our first kid's on the way.
Well, I don't know if this is true where you live, but in Nashville, to get into the good daycares, you really need to be on a list, like from the second you find out you're pregnant. Even when you're trying, it's not a bad idea to get on the list to get on the good daycares. Both of my kids are in just a fantastic program that we love that's kind of near both of our work, kind of right in the middle. So that's a big one. I think also talking to friends and figuring out who they love, what has worked well for them, and what you're comfortable with. Are you comfortable with a high school student babysitting for you? Do you want it to be a college student? Do you want it to be a nanny? And kind of thinking about that, what your comfort level is and who you trust for taking care of their kids that you would trust that with taking care of your own. Those are two good tips that I have for you when it comes to childcare, because it's definitely something that you'll need. I know for our family, we don't have relatives nearby, and so we pay for good childcare for our kids.
That's cool. Did you guys, so one of the things that we're thinking about doing is, and this is totally off subject, but I want to know about it, because I'm sure you've heard about like midwives and versus like having the kid at the hospital. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Because I'm sure you've spoken to women on both ends of the spectrum.
Well, I actually am kind of right in the middle there, because I used a midwife that delivered at a hospital for our babies. Yeah, so I delivered at Vanderbilt here in Nashville, and they have the Vanderbilt midwives. And so it's kind of the best of both worlds, because you get all the experience and of having a midwife and having, that potentially long labor and not having many interventions if you don't want them. But you also have the backbone of a hospital that if something does go wrong, that you're right there. So that was something that worked really well for us for our first two kids. And then our third baby, we ended up having a C-section, but I still had the midwives who were with me all through my whole pregnancy journey, just ended up having that C-section for the delivery. So I am a huge advocate of the midwives, but I'm also a huge advocate of being at a hospital because birth, there is something that can go wrong every time. And so being somewhere where if emergency happens that you can, you know, that you're in good hands, I think ultimately it's all about just having that healthy baby.
Yeah, I think, you know, for sure, like protecting yourself in case something goes wrong. That's something that we were kind of worried about too. And then when we went to see the doctor, you know, when we found out about, how she was pregnant, he kind of, I don't know, man, he sort of freaked us out a little bit about the midwife thing. Like he was saying that, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, it's not healthy and like all this stuff. So
yeah, I don't know that. I agree with it, like yeah, not being healthy. But
I saw a documentary made by we saw a couple of documentaries. I think one of them was by Ricky Lake.
Yeah, I've seen that as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's what actually kind of inspired us. And we had a couple of friends that have, you know, that had midwives when they were born and are having midwives for their kids, and they just swear by it. I just don't know if there are enough people that are educated about it, and I'm not educated enough about it to. To know, but we want to be. So that's what we're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
Yeah. I think that, you know, if you've got a low risk pregnancy and, I'm not a proponent of home birth. I just think that too much can go wrong. And I had things go wrong with both of my labors with my first two kids that I was very thankful to be at a hospital. But I do think that the, experience of having a midwife is really fantastic and, something that I was very grateful to have experienced with my kids. But I am on the side that I want to be at a hospital in case something goes wrong.
Cool. Yeah, no, that's good. It's a good to have protection backup plan, right?
Yeah, right.
Cool. So back to the book. As far as like blending, you also mentioned blending community and passions and responsibilities. And again, of course, this has to do, ties back to balance, right? And sort of integrating all of those important aspects of our lives and having a nice sort of synergy among them all. How can somebody do that? How can somebody blend all of those different things, and women in particular? How can a woman do that between family, friends, kids, all that
sure.
stuff?
Sure. You know, I think that it's just really important to recognize that self-care doesn't mean necessarily that you're alone all the time. I think embracing help was one area that we talked about, but it's also being in community and, you know, spending time with friends or taking classes that are with other like-minded individuals. It's figuring out where you can just get relationship and be in community with other people. I think that's so important, that we're not meant to live alone, we're not meant to be alone, and that ultimately cultivating community, I think, is such a beautiful part of a life's journey. And so identifying where you can find that community is important. And so it might be through your hobbies, it might be through church, it might be through how you volunteer, it might just be through your neighborhood, but figuring out where that community is in your life and really being intentional with that, I think, is very, very important.
Absolutely. For sure. Another thing that we got to talk about is rest. So what are some big things that people can start practicing to really get the right amount of rest and renewal that they need? Because today, I think that more so than ever, people are not getting enough rest. And it obviously has an impact on their lives, but also renewal, right? Like going outside, walking in nature, not having the TV on and falling asleep to it with, you know, Kim Kardashian in the background, and like just different stuff. How can people like optimize their days? How can women optimize their days in that regard?
Right. Well, I think it's, again, letting go, that sometimes you're not going to be able to get everything done that you think you need to get done to get that 7 to 9 hours of recommended sleep. And it's so important to get enough sleep. When I don't have a newborn, I should say, I am big on getting that 7 to 9 hours. I typically am in bed by 9:30 and get up at 5. Right now, I'm only sleeping every two to three hour stretches right now. But
How are you dealing with that?
I'm tired. But I think that when you don't have a newborn, when you don't have, life circumstances that are going to impact that, I think ideally, getting that 7 to 9 hours is really going to have you running optimally. I'm great at sleep, but I'm not great at kind of some of the other areas of slowing down, taking a Sabbath, having extended quiet periods. But I know that is the goal, that's what I want. And that is really healthy and really a great way to live. That's just something that on my own journey is something that I am having to navigate and figure out with being a busy mom and working and little kids and that sort of thing. But it is very important. And for sure, where you can start is by getting enough sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as like the quiet time thing that you mentioned, one of the big things, because I, for a long time, I would try to meditate and then I would leave it alone and then I would try it again and then I would stop doing it. And, finally one day I decided that, I'm just going to commit to this and I'm going to do it. Even if I'm not doing it right, I'm going to do it and I'm going to give myself this quiet time, 20 to 30 minutes a day. And I'm going to commit myself. And so after I started, becoming quote unquote better at it, I guess you could say, I wrote an article about it and I mentioned it on the podcast as well. And then, people started asking more and more questions about meditation, and I'm no expert by any means, but one of the things that I have realized is that just trying it and just doing it, even if you're doing it wrong, is a huge, huge leap in progress in and of itself. And it's like so
absolutely
ridiculously helpful, because I don't think we're ever really going to do it right as far as most things in life are concerned, but giving it a shot, doing it always helps. And it always, you make small steps daily, right? You improve
right
a little bit more every day.
Yep.
And
even
get it down.
Even finding things like podcasts or things that you can do in the car and mindfulness activities, even starting small, like you say, I think is a great step in the right direction.
For sure. For sure. So what else would you recommend that what were some of the other big things that you mentioned in the book that our female listeners would really find helpful that we didn't cover?
I think the only other thing that I'd love to mention is creating healthy boundaries and being boundaried with both our time and in our relationships and commitments. So this goes back to saying no, but it's really just being intentional of what is it that I want to do? What is it that I not want to do? And sticking to those boundaries, I think is really important. And I think it can be difficult for us to establish at first, but once we do that, it impacts every aspect of our life. And so thinking about who are the people that lift me up, who are the people that, suck the life out of me, and the people that suck the life out of me, being boundaried in those relationships and being comfortable with saying no, being comfortable with saying, I don't think that this is good for me right now in my life. And having those healthy boundaries are going to make a difference in your work, make a difference in your family, make a difference in just how you're living your life. So I think that's an important one to acknowledge as well.
I love it. Sounds good. Well, final question for you, Jessica, before we close
okay
out.
Great.
The same question that I ask every single one of our guests, and that is, what does it mean to you to live a meaningful life?
Gosh, that's a big question. You should have prepared me for that ahead of time. I think what it means for me to live a meaningful life is living a life with intention, living a life with gratitude, living a life that ultimately is a reflection of my faith and my my love for people, that ultimately that when people get to know me and spend time with me, that they feel like they have been loved well, that they have been listened to, and that they matter. I just want to live a life that loves well. I think that is how to live a meaningful life.
I love it. The Fringe Hours, Making Time for You, comes out on February 17th. And Jessica, where could people find you? Where can people find the book? And how can they connect with you if they want to get in touch?
The Fringe Hours is pretty much available wherever books are sold. You can find me on themomcreative.com. I'm on Twitter at Jessica N. Turner and on Instagram at Jessica N. Turner as well. And you can follow the hashtag Fringe Hours to see how people are taking advantage of their Fringe Hours, making time for themselves, and living beautiful lives.
Boom. Love it. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Our listeners certainly appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Dean, thank you so much. Take care.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed today's episode of the Flash Notes podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you took just a minute or so to review our podcast in iTunes. And if you're interested in learning more about Flash Notes book summaries, come on over to getflashnotes.com. Again, that's getflashnotes.com. And you can sign up for $1 and get access to business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. Thanks again for listening. My name is Dean Bukhari, and I will see you on the next episode right here on the Flash Notes podcast.